Hello, Kappa. How's everybody doing today? Woo, right. Friday, nothing wrong with that. the day before Valentine's Day. Very exciting. Welcome, everyone. My name is Ben Rutkowski. I work here at SLB Radio. I will be sort of introducing the space, what we're going to be doing today, and I'm also up here with our fantastic intern, Tamriel.
My name's Tamara. Let's make that clear. And I am an internship here at Saturday Night Brigade. You know, this is Ben 10, you know, favorite buddy. And yeah, we're going to go over some of the community guidelines and where the bathroom is. Just so you know, it's over here on the left if you go straight down the hallway. To the left is girls, to the right is boys.
Fantastic, thank you. We kind of have a nickname thing going on. mine doesn't really play. But guys, welcome everyone. I know we have some terrific poets in here that are going to present their poetry. Very excited about that. We're going to have a fun time. One thing we always say when we host events like this is we want to make sure that we clap for people like we're never going to see them again. It's not supposed to be sort of funereal, but you guys want to try clapping real quick for everybody in here? Woo! All right. Fantastic, everybody. Welcome to Cappuccino 2026. Let's do it. Oh yeah. You ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Pippa, give it up for Pippa.
All right. Hi everybody. I'm going to be your MC for the first section and we're going to get started with Claire. Claire loves climbing, potatoes and crafts. She wanted to be an astronaut, a farmer and a landscape architect. The most amazing thing she's seen is somebody do a free solo Taipei 101. She's moved once with a house in a 5-minute drive of one another. Her favorite book is The Girl Who Drank the Moon, and she's been an entrepreneurial lemonade salesperson, a babysitter, a teacher, and a gardener. Her favorite sibling is her dog, Trudy. Now let's give it up for Claire!
Hi, my name is Claire Scheid, and I'm going to be reading two poems today. The first is titled On Trying to Write. You can't just sit there trying to think, because apparently there's no difference between writer's block and not even trying. Write for the full time, but only as much as you want. Make sure you just see where the poem takes you. Don't sit in the stiff chair and feel the cold air. Don't listen to the clock getting louder and louder. Don't notice the flow of your own thoughts. And definitely don't float and tread for one to grasp. Don't pay attention for the vision of a clear blue river suspended by your own stubbornness. And don't make the connection between that and Mario Kart's Rainbow Road. Don't let your mind ripple like a glimmering canal, but stay on the stony dry path of poetry. Be inspired to a point. But always stay within the guidelines that aren't there and write as much as you want until the time is up. And then my second poem is titled, They Wouldn't Let Me Do the Pommel Horse because I'm a girl and that's why I quit, / The Girl Who Cried Pommel Horse. She is young, midnight in a leotard, relishes the danger. She tries not to fall. Below, shouts, born of bravura, but they don't reach her ears as she laughs. What can she do before they stop her? She walks faster, arms wide, knows she will not get hurt. Cornflower mats there to catch her, a constant in the whirlwind of first grade. And so she makes a game of it, tests her limits, 1 foot out, 1 arm in. She raises the invented stakes and relishes the danger and knows. They don't reach her ears, only the thud of a dropped book. She focuses solely on the taste of new. A taste she's had before, a taste she'll have again. Now, instead, stuck to the rigidity, the confines, the thin line of balance beam as she yearns to jump over the tiny horse and hear their squeals as she makes 10 feet and waits again, toes stuck to the floor of cherry Gatorade and sweat. When, inevitably, she falters until they won't catch her when she falls. Thank you.
Amazing job, Claire. I'm just gonna take this off, sorry. Thank you. All right, amazing job, Claire. And next up, we have Leah Benton. Leah Benton is a dishwasher and ninth grade literary artist at Pittsburgh Kappa. She loves to explore a variety of writing forms, particularly poetry, fiction, and playwriting. Her recent play, Bob in California, was performed at Kappa last year. Most of her writing draws inspiration from personal experiences. Some things that matter to her include cheese, bread, and hope. Through her writing, she wishes to invite readers into her mind. Let's give it up for Leah!
Hi, I'm Leah, and I'm going to be reading two poems. My first poem's name is The Days I Ran on Chocolate. Some days, I dream of the milk for blood, hazelnut for saliva, and soybeans for teeth. With every thought, wheat flour shifted in my head. With every inhale, gentle wafers crumbled in my lungs. Milk powder glided through my skull. Cocoa butter leaked down my spine. It was never an issue, the rich, velvety sensations, not until the ruptures in my chest. Every ingredient in baker's note, drizzle and topping, could not conform to the limits of my body. I could do little more than watch as my inside surrendered, and I poured and poured like a never-ending stream. Eventually, I had halted to a slow, sickening drip, but my quirks and specialties went to waste. What was left was a rotting mush, and now I am nothing but its shell. My second poem is called Clutching Sparks, and it's made incorporating my favorite lines from my chapbook, Clutching Sparks. The youth, milk for blood, hazelnut for saliva, and soybeans for teeth, stemming from cool flesh and hot bones, taking on their bodies for movement, recollection, desperation, and sound. With 20-pound shoulders, they peek through cracks for a glimpse of anything that moves, and embrace whatever corpses or crooked calligraphy may lie ahead. Why do they gather might for a world which preys on their birth? One day they too shall become mindless people who have long lost their ability to form meaning, mixed in mannerisms and experiences, overlooked between rows of family branches, passed around in brief mentions, and seen only in glimpses, if seen at all.
That was amazing. All right, next up we have Sarah. Sarah is a poet, artist, and cat lover who figure skates and rock climbs in her free time. She's attended Pittsburgh Kappa since sixth grade and won Scholastic Gold and Silver Keys over the past 4 years for her poetry and prose. All right, let's give it up for Sarah. Okay, lovely. All right, next up, we're actually going to have Gianna Freyer. Gianna Freyer is a junior at Kappa, where she is a literary major. She generally writes poetry and nonfiction. Gianna enjoys studying philosophy and stacking. With her writing, she hopes to make her audience feel understood, and she wishes you peace. All right, come on up, Gianna.
Hi, guys. I hope you're all having a great day. My name is Gianna. I'm going to be reading my piece, I Hate Hatred's Guts. I hate it. No, I need a harsher word. I need a word that pumps the thick feeling of loathing into your heart, a word that understands the depth of my animosity. I absolutely, positively, strongly, definitely, seriously, totally, 100% abhor everything about that one outfit I wore that one month on that one day to that one place. It keeps me up at night. It keeps me up at night. Yes, I know no one remembers that outfit, but I don't care about that outfit because this isn't about a stupid outfit. It's the feeling radiating from it. No, I need a stronger word. It's the penetrating feeling emanating from my brain that tears open my eyelids on stale nights. It's the corner of my brain, the obscure corner that reminds me of things it's reminded me to think about until I'm so sick of the thought that it travels to the nasty nausea knocking at the nooks of my stomach. I hate that corner. No, I abhor that corner. Abhor. I mean every letter of it. A, the acidic bark detaining every each, sorry, the acidic bark detaining each word I could say before I even began thinking of the letters to form them. B, the bass hum lying against my eardrums, lining my mind with static until the migraine that follows it. H, what was once hatred littered among my soul, but now fiercer. O, my obsession with every possibility, every chance I've had, every decision I've made. R, the ravaging ruckus resonating in places beyond my reach. I abhor my abhorrence. I do. Perhaps my abhorrence won't get me very far, as I'm still falling ill with it. Perhaps my surface level abhorrence is only the easy way out, as I'm still facing the repercussions of its presence in my life, as I'm still letting it win. Perhaps I deserve to win every once in a while. Thank you.
Awesome. All right. Next up, we have Opal Bradman. I think. Opal Bradman is a Pittsburgh-born poet and playwright. When he was young, he dreamed of shooting stars and melting moons, but soon found there was much more than that of the unreachable. He wrote his first poem on the back of a napkin and titled it Nothing More Than What It Is. Most of his work centers on the more surreal parts of his life, his dreams and memories that exist in a more abstract sense than anything else. He has been published in several Pittsburgh local magazines, such as YAWP, and continues to release work to the public through zines. All right, Opal.
I'll be reading my poem, Cemetery, Nocturne. Upon some silver-stained dewdrops that cradled the evening sun, rested the beak of sleep, so much more beautiful undone. And there stood upon leaves and their stems a graceful wisp, and it flitted to and fro across the crumbling stone. I slept upon the sheet and dreamed about hazy weather. When I awoke, it seemed such was not a reverie.
Great job. All right, hello. I am Ember, and I will be your MC for the second section. Up next is Finn Harvey. Finn Harvey was born in Pittsburgh, PA, and has remained his whole life. He's an 11th grade literary student at Pittsburgh Kappa 6 through 12. He participates in a variety of art forms such as writing, photography, blacksmithing, and glassworking, but has yet to settle into one. He enjoys the outdoors and draws inspiration from the world around himself for his work. He has worked as a volunteer at the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust and as a scare actor at the local theme park. Everyone welcome Finn.
So my name's Finn Harvey. I'll be reading Hans S. Meyer. I was born on a small farm outside Potsdam. I ran along the fields with my father as he worked and planted potatoes. I had a sister who was born on a small farm outside of Potsdam. I ran through the ditch by the road with her, covering her golden locks with mud. I had a teacher who thought I was a fool as my friend group held back our laughter. I was starry-eyed when that same teacher told us of our duty to our country, to defend it from oppressors. I joked with my friends about rolling up and smoking my parent consent letter. I said goodbye as the call marched by and I joined in line. We sang in harmony in our barracks. I learned how to load and aim a howitzer. I said goodbye to my friends as they marched off to the very front while I stayed back. I operated our guns hidden behind a wall of trees. I was safe from what was on the other side. I was careless. I handled it unsafely. I didn't close the breach properly. I had an artillery gun's worth of metal torn through my body. I was considered a fool by my peers. I was buried in a ditch by the road. I had a sister who opened my door to my notice, and I had a father who was forced into selling to the army. I was killed near a small farm outside of Verdun.
Okay. Thank you so much, Finn. All right. Up next is Basil I. Chiodi Lee. Basil I. Chiodi Lee watched too many medical dramas and now wants to be a pharmacist if being a playwright can't pay the bills. Once, they dislocated their knee and popped it back in place before even getting out of bed in the morning. They were born in New York City and moved to Pittsburgh in 2009 because rent was high and Zoran Mamdani had not invented socialism yet. They are an accidental acolyte of Thomas Pynchon, but their favorite book is Persepolis by Marjane Satrapi. They co-directed a short film that has been selected for the National Film Festival for Talented Youth in Seattle, Washington. Their writing has received several honors, including recognition from the Eugene O'Neill Young Playwrights Festival and the City Theater Young Playwrights Festival. But the most important honor is that their dog, Mr. Bingley, loves them very much. Give it up for Basil.
Hi, I'm Basil, and I see my dad taking a video, and I'm gonna ask him not to do that. Dad. Hi, I'm still looking at you. You have your phone out. Okay. Okay. I'm going to read a poem. It's called If You Please. A couple times a year, I get to pretend I'm from Short Hills. I get dropped in the middle of the woods, and no one is any the wiser because I look just like her, really. I'll give you a dollar if you can tell us apart, walking side by side with the same water on our hands. Neither of us has a real name. We talk about this often. Look at us. Together, we're solid as her white windowsill. Oh, but I stained it red in the middle of the night because I was bleeding from our nose, my left nostril and her right. I think our history is uglier than us, but we're pretty monstrous together, all things considered. Look, why don't you shoot me a letter once I get home? Paper is the second tongue I never had, you never needed. We'll talk all the time, like a couple of pals, like a couple of real friends who bleed out of each other's noses. I get a little thrill out of writing your address on the envelope because I have to write mine too. I put both our middle names in case there's some others out there like us, though I doubt it. We're just like each other, and you're just like everyone else in your stretch of the woods, and I am not even like myself. I've been seeing you when I look in the mirror. I wave and you wave back, and I love it because I miss you. All right, thank you, Basil. Kiame Williams is up next. Kiame Williams is an aspiring 15-year-old writer who is a literary arts major at Kappa. She has lived in the city of Pittsburgh her whole life and has actually only ever been to two other states. She is a two-time receiver of the Ben Carson Scholarship Award. She draws most of her inspiration from the music and media they enjoy. Their favorite hobbies are collecting physical media like CDs and DVDs and roller skating. Everyone, welcome Kiame! Keep the applause.
Okay. I'm reading an excerpt from my fiction piece called Vampires Will Never Hurt You. She could feel her heart sink into her stomach again as the crouched over figure in front of her looked back at her. She rapidly blinked, noticing the long black hair and dark gown the figure wore. The figure stood up and the moon's light revealed the blood around its equally red lips. Veronica could slightly pick up the labored breathing of the victim behind the figure, making her heart race even more. Both stood still, waiting for the other to react. Then, for what seemed like forever, she spoke. "Helena?" Veronica asked the figure, her voice shaky from fear. The figure stood up. The figure stepped forward with hesitation, the moon slowly unveiling the figure's full face, her eyes wild and face stricken with worry. Veronica unconsciously stepped back. Helena's mouth opened, but she was speechless, unable to form a single word that could defend herself. "Helena, what did you do?" Veronica quietly says, so quietly she can barely hear herself. Helena started to close in on her, causing Veronica to keep stepping back until she hit the wooden door behind her. Confusingly, Helena had her hands up, as if to surrender, but it only made the blood on her stiletto nails that much more visible to her. Helena paused right in front of her, lowering her hands and looking her up and down before she finally spoke. "You don't have to be scared." Helena furrowed her eyebrows and tilted her head. Veronica looked at her with utter confusion. "Don't have to be scared," she replied. "Are you insane?" She raised her voice a bit, which caused Helena to freeze. The sound of the clock began to grow louder, almost ringing in Veronica's ears. She squeezed her eyes, trying to suppress the sound, but it only caused the sound of the victim gurgling his own blood more blaring. It was maddening, making her want to just run away. She flinched as Helena's icy cold hands touched her cheek. "I would never hurt you, so just calm down," Helena smiled, revealing her razor-sharp teeth, also stained with blood. Veronica began to lose her breath as her voice and hearing became more and more distorted until it went completely black.
All All right. Thank you so much for that wonderful piece, Kiame. Up next is Anna. Anna Minton likes racing, baking, and eating tortellini. She wishes to spite her younger self and, rather than become a teacher, study forensic science and mortuary sciences. She has had two broken fingers, one of which her three-year-old sister broke by accident. Her favorite book is The Fault in Our Stars by John Green. Her current job is volunteering at a neighborhood theater in Bellevue. She enjoys binge-watching TV shows like Stranger Things and Dance Moms. Everyone welcome Anna! Woo.
Hi, I'm Anna. I'll be reading my poem called Argument. Fairy lights flicker around the pink room. The blinds are open, but sunlight hesitates. The ghost of a tear stings my eye. I'm sorry, I repeat for the 12th time. My words spin around my head. I'm dizzy, and I can't help it. I beg for you to say three words I've heard 1,000 times over. I forgive you. But you don't. You argue back, press for more answers that I don't have, answers I've never had. I don't know, I tell you, but we continue to argue. This isn't what I wanted to ruin it all, so I bring my knees to my chest. The air reeks of perfumes that sting my eyes more, yet I don't let a single tear fall. I have to be strong. I have to show you I care, not that I fold under pressure. Because I do. Not that you don't already know that. You do. You have for years, since we were little. My eyes flood with tears, but none fall. You tell me you can't forgive me. I understand, I say, but I don't. I don't understand why we can't go back to the way we were. We always did that. What's different this time? We should have gone back. I should have said something. Anything. I really wish I did. It's been over a year. I can't remember the last time I was gasping for air laughing at the stupidest things. They weren't even funny, but they were to us.
Okay, everybody, we are going to take about a 15-minute break until 1:50, and then we're going to reorganize to hear a special guest reader. So, yeah, have a nice break, everybody. Wait, and let's listen to Mix Carlson for a second.
Thank you, wonderful job. I'm so impressed, Kappa. We're going to have a quick break. There are snacks. Take one snack so that there is enough for everybody to have a snack. Okay, enjoy, wonderful work.
All right, we do have a guest reader coming up that our friend Basil is going to introduce. So everybody give it up for Basil. Keep the applause going.
Hi again. I am so excited to introduce our special guest reader today, Lauren D. Woods, who recently published her debut story collection with Autumn House Press. Lauren D. Woods, originally from the Dallas area, now lives and writes in Washington, D.C., where she was a 2024-25 Arts and Humanities Fellow for Fiction. Her writing has appeared in The Best Small Fiction, as well as The Antioch Review, The Normal School, and among many others. Lauren works in consulting and lives with her husband, four children, two cats, and a guinea pig. She's here today to read from her debut story collection, The Great Grown-Up Game of Make-Believe. Please welcome Lauren D. Woods.
Thank you, Basil. I'll stand, but I'll put my little timer here. Thank you, Basil, for that lovely introduction. I just want to say you guys are so impressive, and it's been so much fun. This is my favorite event. I've done four events in Pittsburgh over the last few days, and this is my favorite because you guys are really, really wonderful, specific line writers and poets, short story writers. There's a lot there. And I'm always part of these conversations like, you know, do people read anymore? And are they interested in the literary arts? And are they all just AIing their papers? And it is not the case. You guys are really wonderful, so keep it up. I'm going to read just an excerpt from one of my stories. And the story actually came from a prompt that I read about in Anne Lamott's Bird by Bird, one of my favorite craft books that I love, full of little nuggets of wisdom. And one of the prompts was, I think, if you can't think of a story to write about, remember being back in high school, not so hard for you guys, remember being back there and think about the lunch tables and who sat where and what was that like. So I pulled from this one, and I'll just pull an excerpt from the middle of it. And this is, timing myself a little bit here. This is a woman who is working at a law firm in New York, and she's remembering being back in school. We go back to elementary school here, not high school. Remembering and then kind of alternating back and forth between the past and present. It's called Room for Three. At Amy's elementary school, there was a plastic slide under the hot Texas sun and a small wooden fort on the playground. It looked like a palace with a long ladder and a moat of pebbles all the way around. She had tried only once her entire fourth grade year to climb to the top where Bridget and her two best friends sat every recess. Amy was only a few rungs up when she saw Bridget's face peering down. Bridget styled her blonde hair in a hairspray-coated poof at her forehead. This is written about the 90s, if you can't tell. It was just starting to drizzle outside, and raindrops hung on Bridget's bangs like jewels. The rest of her wavy hair splayed around her shoulders. She had blue eyes and a constellation of freckles across her delicate nose. "There's only room for three," Bridget said. Next to Bridget, Jane wore her short brown hair and a high ponytail with two scrunchies, and Kira, the shortest of the three, tugged on a lock of stick-straight red hair and looked sorry. Amy climbed down and left the fort. Looking back over her shoulder, she noticed that the girls had their backpacks spread out around them. What Bridget had said wasn't true. The fort could have held five or even six girls if they'd wanted. At lunchtime, Bridget and Jane and Kira sat together again. Amy sat with her own friends, a girl she'd known since the second grade, and another girl who loved playing pretend. When she told the story of the fort, she did it to make them laugh. For her Jane impression, she tugged at her ponytail and pursed her lips. To do Kira, she watched the other girls and laughed at whatever they said. Imitating Bridget was the hardest. It was a blank smile without blinking, but it made her friends laugh hardest of all. Amy was good at impressions because she watched the other girls in the fort so closely, the way they spoke, their clothes, their hair. She'd concluded that what separated her from Bridget and Bridget's friends was her own hair, thin, brown, and curly. With some effort, Amy could cinch it into a ponytail like Jane's. It took half the morning and a cloud of hairspray to straighten the top, and even then, after what remained coiled and sprang vengefully in every direction. Amy's mother would say the problem was not her hair, and the other girls would be lucky to have a friend like Amy, who was loyal and kind. But Amy knew it was about the hair, and also the way Amy excelled at math and nearly everything in school, and the girls weren't looking for someone loyal and kind, and it had been many years since her mother was in school. So Amy did not share with her mother the real reason she wanted to be invited to the fort, which was to catch the attention of Lane. A boy who loved drawing, stood inches above the other boys, and more often than not, was king at Foursquare. She wasn't sure how exactly she would catch his attention, except that all the boys seemed to love the girls in the fort. In class, Amy watched Lane filling his notebooks with sketches of video game characters. Her one real interaction with him was the time a kickball came her way in gym class, ricocheting off the side of her face, and Lane ran over to ask if she was all right. He dressed in all black and had shaggy brown hair. As he walked away, he whispered, "I hate PE," which was the bravest thing Amy had ever heard a boy say. So I wanted to take just a few minutes to chit-chat informally, take some questions about writing, if you guys have any, and chat about kind of the writing life, gathering scraps that feed into writing, and other things that have helped me as a writer and might be useful to you all. You guys already have a leg up on me. I didn't start writing seriously until I was in my 20s living in New York with a writing group and kind of realizing this, you know, burgeoning creative thing inside of me that I had never really given time and attention to. So I kind of figured it out that way. It would have been lovely to have, classes devoted to it before that time. But it came nevertheless. So I think some of the things that have been helpful to me are journaling. I'm curious if there's a show of hands, how many people just started journaling before you knew you liked writing? A lot of us are kind of, obsessive like that. And it's kind of like almost pre-writing where you're learning to see the world in a particular way and starting to reflect on it. So I also journaled for probably from the age of 13 until the present, off and on over the years. What to do with those journals is another question entirely someday, probably burned when I die. But you know, but that was kind of how I got into writing, as well as with writing groups. I formed my first writing group when I was in my 20s, living in New York, finding like-minded people to just swap stories with, and I think that really sustained me and kept me going. So some of the practices I think are really important, and a lot of you probably already do this. One of them is just kind of collecting scraps of things that you think and hear and say that form the genesis of your writing, and you don't know what it'll turn into. I'm a big believer in collecting things before you know what they are and mean, and filing them away somewhere. So, you know, some of you may already do this, but keeping them in notebooks, observations, lines, things you see, scraps of dialogue. I find, at least for myself, the older I get, the less reliable my memory is, and the specificity of an experience is almost impossible to replicate. So you guys already are doing a lot of work and have a lot of sharp observation, so the more you can do that, I think it can be really helpful. I keep, you know, just file folders on my desktop and my computer of things that may turn into stories later. You know, I have a folder of like unfinished stories, mostly finished stories, scraps of stories, whatever it is. I think it can be really fun to save those things. And the other thing that I think has been really helpful for me in writing, and a lot of you all are probably doing this, but really thinking thoughtfully about your influences, and, you know, taking in and reading a lot of whoever inspires you, figuring out who and what moves you, and then expanding from that. I mean, I heard a lot of really distinct voices and lines and styles even today, which was really cool. And so I think that, you know, you all are probably doing that and figuring out who you resonate with. But I think the more you can do that and the more you can expand that, the more you kind of develop into your most authentic self as a writer. And I certainly have found for myself, there are certain writers that for some reason, short story writers, I really vibe with a lot. Particularly for me, a lot who go into backstory, into girlhood, into complicated family relationships, things that I'm interested increasingly in, and now, you know, other topics. So I think, you know, really cultivating that and leaning into that has helped me to figure out who I am authentically as a writer and what I want to lean into. And we're always growing as writers, so kind of what I want to grow into next. And then the last thing I would say is the writing life. I have kind of found over time that it has been really good to expand what a writing life means as, you know, a college student and then a working adult and, you know, now a mom. What does that mean? And I think when I first started writing, I thought I had kind of a like 1960s, 1970s perception that like if you're a writer, you're a full-time writer and you don't have that other job and you can quit and you're a full-time artist and that's the most authentic way. And now being friends with a lot of writers and impressively published folks, I can say that every person has a totally different story of how they make writing fit into their lives. And many people like me have a different full-time job. I work in government, that's how I pay the bills. And now I don't have to, you know, worry about writing as something that has to generate money. It's certainly great when it does, but I don't rely upon it and it doesn't stunt my writing, except for, you know, time, but there are ways around that. And so I think, you know, as you're thinking about your future and thinking about college and what do you want to do and all these big decisions you have to make, I, you know, hope you don't feel that you have to limit yourself in any way. I think some of the most amazing writers that I know are people who have other interests too and have leaned into them and are experts in weird things and double major and do all kinds of things. So yeah, keep it up, whatever you're doing. I have absolutely loved hearing you guys speak and the wonderful MCs. And if we've got time left and anybody has questions, I'm happy to answer.
So we can hear you. I know we have a question over here. I can hold it for you if you don't want to hold it.
What was the hardest part about starting to write your book?
I didn't know it was a book. I didn't think I was writing toward anything. I was just kind of coming up with stories on the side. And I think that I thought that the stories had to be good in the first draft or even the second draft. And I didn't realize that for me, it's a, you know, process of iterating over and over, and having something that you're dissatisfied with is no indication of what the end result will be. Amazing. I would love to be an eagle, because I think flying would be very cool, and I'd love to have like amazing eyes to look at the prey down below. It would be very fun.
Yeah.
Anybody else have questions? When you hit a writer's block, what do you do? Oh, I love that question. If it's a little block, I'll try and write through it. But if it's really bad, I'll read something that I like. I'll just stop writing and I'll start reading until I hit something. And then I'm like, oh, that's a fun idea. That's a cool voice. I just kind of read something that inspires me rather than trying to push through.
Who's your favorite author?
I think short story writers right now, I really love Joy Williams, because she does a lot of really fun, magical things, and she's got this amazing voice. Yeah, I feel like I have a really boring job right now. It's really just spreadsheets, and that's wonderful, because the creative part of myself is sort of like dying a little bit all day. And so then when I get done, I'm like, okay, I just want to dream and think, and, you know, so that really helps. I have friends who teach creative writing who I think sometimes struggle a little bit, because they've been in the creative world all day and then they don't want to do their work. So I think having a boring job really helps. I do love my job, if anyone is asking. But I think not being precious about time and learning to carve out, you know, 20, 30 minutes at a time, and knowing that you can actually make progress in that time has been really helpful. And knowing the time of day that I work best, I'm a morning person, and so I try to carve out 20 or 30 minutes at lunchtime, or sometimes, you know, if it's a weekend, occasionally before anything else. And so that's been really helpful.
Okay, so like, how do you balance like motherhood and like also being like a author, like as well? Like, how do you make time for both?
Yeah, it's really hard. I think aiming for kind of a solid B in everything I do and trying to be a little bit average about it. I think, you know, I try to be really present for my kids when they're there. And so I'm not, you know, thinking about other things, but I'm also, so I'm like fully there. I'm like, if you tell me the story, I'm going to do my best to hear you. But on the other side, when I need to carve out time, I also have some boundaries, and I'm like, I'm taking an hour right now. You know, this is going to be kind of a sacred hour on a weekend, and just trying to be fully present wherever I am. And it's hard. And sometimes I don't get the balance right, but my kids are very forgiving for the most part.
So we read an excerpt from your story. And I just had like a question of how you build your characters. Like, where do you get your inspirations from? I know you said you read a lot of books, so can you just tell me like, how you get that like inspiration to like make these type of characters that you have?
Yeah, they all come from different places. So each character has kind of a different origin. Some are just what if stories. So I, one of my characters from a story, Clementine, was based on a snippet I knew about a friend who had never heard a nursery rhyme in his life. And I just thought that was so crazy because I grew up reading nursery rhymes and my mother reading to me. And I thought, what kind of person and what kind of life has never kind of heard children's books or nursery rhymes? And I just kept thinking like that seemed sad to me in a way because it felt like kind of a missing part of childhood. And so then I developed a story out of that, kind of melding it with some family members I have who are from very rural parts of West Virginia and thinking about that. Other characters, most of them are kind of what if scenarios. Others are a little bit more based on real life memories. I had, when I was in high school, I had a friend who at one point just vanished. After school, he disappeared from social media and nobody knows what happened to him and nobody's heard anything. And I was haunted by that. And so one of the characters is based on that. What would happen if somebody just disappeared and you couldn't figure out why? Yeah, good question. How do you fully develop a really short story, like a flash fiction piece? I think it's mostly intuitive and not analytical for me. I think the classic answer is everybody has a character arc, so has the character changed by the end? But I don't really fully believe in classical answers because sometimes that isn't true and you just feel it in your gut that it's the end and there's nothing more to say. So I think it's an intuitive feeling. And even then I'm not sure because I send it out and if it's not published, I think, well, maybe it's not done and I thought it was and then I make it longer. So it's a lot of gut feeling and then trial and error. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Lauren. Okay, can we get one more round of applause for her? Okay, up next is Liam. Liam is a 9th grade literary artist at Pittsburgh Kappa. His dreams include publishing a book and working with animals as a career path. His favorite writers include Cormac McCarthy and Stephen Jesse Bernstein. He holds strong beliefs in individualism and creativity. His works are inspired by the surrealist art of Eric Roper and Oscar Ciccone. Everyone give it up for Liam!
I'm going to be reading my free association poem called Dead Fingers Talking. I'm proud to speak of life as a ladder that comes up from filth. I wonder if I should see it as an open escalator in charities of the future. You erase your past and burns the records that come them that you came down from. I know a charity shouldn't. Have a passive deflection without any straw of oblivion, never. I'm grateful I only rarely will oversee all charities when I succeed in ignoring everything against the giveaway. One day a real judge will come, someone who's senile yet has seen all and wears suspenders and a weathered robe atop, so sure of himself and rightfully so.
Thank you so much, Liam. That was great. Okay, up next is Hoyam. Hoyam Bichaba is a sophomore literary artist. She was born and raised in Pittsburgh. She currently attends Pittsburgh Kappa 6 through 12. She enjoys hanging with friends and playing soccer, usually combining the two. She also enjoys playing soccer with her two older brothers. She enjoys working with kids, even if they can be stubborn. Welcome, Hoyam!
Hello. I'll be reading my poem, Endless White. A velvet silence wraps the world in a heavy shroud. An endless pale has swallowed every spark of glee. Driveways are lost and engines cold. The winter keeps us in its hold. Shadows creep while winds grow bold. Sun is what I now long for. Doors are tight and gates buried. We are now tucked out of sight. Frost covers the pane. It hides paths and buries lanes. Outside, the world is still and white, and fields are smooth. But here inside, the fire is bright to keep us through the long white.
Gosh, that was such beautiful imagery, Hoyam. Okay, up next is Macklin. Macklin McGannon is a 12th grade literary artist at Pittsburgh Kappa. Macklin spends his free time expanding his knowledge on computer science and training for his final EMT certification. Macklin also enjoys hiking and participating in combat sports. Macklin has two outdoor cats, and his favorite author is George Orwell. Give it up for Macklin!
My name's Macklin Monahan, and this is a nonfiction creative piece titled The White-Tailed Deer. The white-tailed deer of Frick Park are a species that roam the tall grasses and take rest under the great oaks and the meadows. They are named after their white tail, but I've noticed the color tending to fall into the buttocks area. In this specific photo, one can see a possibly engorged tick on the deer's neck. Ticks are pests that you should be wary of any time you decide to venture into Frick Park. They paradrop from trees, catapult from leaves, and crawl up your shoe just to nestle in and drink your blood. It sounds gruesome, but they aren't the worst unless it carries disease. Then you're in trouble. One time, amidst the Serengeti, I had fallen ill while camping out after a safari. I had finally gotten all ready to curl up in my sleeping bag and fall into a deep rest when I felt a stinging sensation in my leg. I launched upwards at maximum force and stuck two fingers exactly where I felt it and felt some hard bead in between them. I had managed to catch a tick biting me before it fully got in. What sucked then was that I had a live tick in my fingers. Not to be crude, but I struck that tick at least 10 times with my flashlight before it laid to rest. It turns out only North American ticks have Lyme disease. Lyme disease or not, this tick possibly explains the deer's deep concealment within the brush. Much like the white tush deer, I tend to conceal my skin problems and could see myself in his hooves, self-exiled to the thick fauna. I used to ponder whether I'd be more content as a white tush deer, frolicking across the meadows that attributed zero what cause to its whiteness. I probably wouldn't be content with the tick.
Hi, I'm Anna again. I'll be your third and final MC. Next up, we've got Adele. She is a ninth grade literary artist here at Pittsburgh Kappa. She's won a Silver Key for the Scholastic Writing Contest. She was born in Austin, Texas, and raised in Pittsburgh. She has one little brother and lives with her mom and dad. She loves spending time with family and friends. Her favorite type of writing is poetry, and her favorite type of genre to read is realistic fiction. Her favorite book is Where the Red Fern Grows by Wilson Rawls. She would one day love to become a teacher for young children.
Hi, my name is Adele, and I'll be reading my poem, Little Brother. Tears slow down your red face. Earlier my tongue speaks, but now it's stuck. Brick wall, now motionless. We used to be friends, photos of us above the mantle, your high-pitched voice rewinding in my brain, and you're little again, and we used to play. Your mismatched socks and your little legs in timeouts on the wooden stairs. We suffered together. Now you sit here crying because of me, my fault. Your toe in pain, and there's nothing for me to say.
Thank you. Next up is Tatenda Gardner. She is a new student at Pittsburgh Kappa, having joined the literary arts program after recently moving from Florida and switching schools. Her favorite things are red velvet cake, the sanctity of her room, and the people close to her. She hasn't won many awards, though she has won the I've Thrown a Party Without Anyone's Knowledge at Age 4 award. And she finds herself valuing the ideals of fate, although it's a complicated concept. She believes in valuing the path that brings us all together.
And I wasn't lying, it is a true story. The first piece I'm reading is from my chapbook, my flash fiction chapbook, and it's a thank you note to my mom, and it's called Heart on My Wrist. The heart that rests permanently on my wrist, a promise, a vow to see you for all that you are and all that you've done for me. A tattooed keepsake of a bond written in God's ink. And when that fateful day comes, when all the leaves have withered and lie at the foot of your roots, I will tell you I love you for the last time. And when all hope is lost, let my eyes be guided to that very spot on my wrist. My second piece is a little longer, but it's called The Photo on the Bedside Table. The photo on the bedside table didn't belong to me. It never would, but it held so much meaning in its wooden frame. When my mother looked at the picture, she saw something beautiful. It represented what could have been, something lost too soon. To me, it was a reminder that I would never be good enough. If your sister were here, things would be different. How could you expect me to be proud of you? If your sister were still here, she would do such great things. She would amount to so much more than you, she would say to me. She would put me down and praise a made-up story of her dream child. My real arts and crafts were never compared to the ones that she kept delicately in her chest. My real grades never compared to the scholar the girl in the photo supposedly was. It was never good enough. I was never good enough. I didn't even know the girl in the photo, and I never would. But she taught me one thing, resentment. I resented her arts and crafts. I resented the report cards that would have been taped gently onto the fridge. I resented her existence, both imaginary and real. I wanted to see her burn. I wanted to see it burn. It was decided. I walked into the room and flung the door open. It was the last sound I would hear. She turned to me, her face twisted in confusion. I snatched the photo off the bedside table. The weight of its wooden frame only angered me more. I rushed into the kitchen and grabbed the lighter and the bottle resting on the counter. I kicked the back door open and threw the photo on the ground and watched the glass fly into the air. The ringing in my ears only grew louder as I poured what was left on the bottle onto the photo. For the first time, I felt warmth, but it was short-lived. I dropped the lighter and watched the fire ignite. It was everything I ever wanted. The sound of the wood splitting and cracking, slowly watching the image of the girl become distorted and charred. I could finally see the beauty she cherished so much. And when I turned to face her, her tears didn't hurt me. As I stepped back into the house, I could hear her rush to the pile of this, sorry, I could hear her rush to the pile of seared wood and paper. In the end, she would never choose me.
That was awesome. Next, we've got Willa Hensley. She's in ninth grade, and when she's not writing or in school, she enjoys reading, going on walks, and spending time with her family and friends.
I'm going to be reading my poem, Junk Drawer. The hinges of the drawer come to a halt, jammed by a red headband. I pull it out, and with it, little white hairs. The clutter inside, a bike chain heavily used, wraps around a piece of pottery. Crumpled papers with scattered ideas fill empty spaces. It is so full that with one wrong move, one bump, it would explode. Every paper, every tool, every story, every moment would come out in one long scream, a string of sentences beaded into one.
So, because tomorrow is Valentine's Day, we have sectioned the last couple of poems off into like a love theme, like all of the poems with like a theme revolving around love are coming up next. So next is Allie. She's 15 and she attends Pittsburgh Kappa. She enjoys softball, pasta, and friends. She was raised in West Philadelphia, but later moved to Pittsburgh. She strongly believes in no ice agents. Her favorite writer is J.K. Rowling. She hasn't had a job yet, but is looking for one currently. She used to have a dog named Baby, but she sadly passed. She still has her tortoise named Pickle.
Hello, my name is Allie, and my poem is called The Comfort in Our Lives. You are the silent room at the end of a very loud day, the place where I don't have to hold my breath or suck my stomach in. With you, the world stops spinning. You are the smell of clean sheets, the warmth of a mug between my hands, and the only voice that makes the static in my head go quiet. I don't have to be anything other than who I am, because your voice is a soft landing that never asks why I fell.
Next up, we've got Amira. She's a senior literary artist at Pittsburgh Kappa. She's always thinking a million things at once, so sometimes she slurs on her words. She's a girl with microscopes for eyes who loves to paint images of her city of Pittsburgh with her words. Born on the second best day of the week, Thursday. Not that it really matters, though.
Okay, hey guys, I low-key didn't think I was reading, but I'm gonna read anyways. And I'm reading a poem called What's Love? And you'll take pictures of me off of a Polaroid we bought from a red, white, and blue. Dressed in denim and plaid, my cheeks painted pink and skin bronze from the July sun. We'll dance under the carnival lights, spending 2 to 3 nights in Chicago's windy streets like we used to back when we only had that beige Honda Civic. A gift from your grandmother, your cousin's picking dandelions to poke in my locks. And you'll play the songs we love on your guitar. On Sundays, when we pray over sloppy pancakes like the day you met my family, that afternoon spent combing out the tiny knots in your fro. Wearing matching PJs on Thanksgiving and baking candied yams on Christmas Eve, teasing the way Pittsburghers say yins, and buying cheap sushi from the Market District in East Liberty. Hands flowing out the car window, D'Angelo playing from the radio.
Next up, we've got Ember Tomlinson. They're a rising writer with a variety of interests. They're an astronaut in their dreams and poet when awake, an avid explorer of the cosmos through radio telescopes. Their art is the thing that empowers them most to keep them smiling through life, right next to their friends. With a love for Adrian Lenker and the colors of the world, they hope you're inspired by their writing.
Thank you so much. Okay, I will be reading two poems today. The first is called I Am Looking for the Grapes, after A Supermarket in California by Allen Ginsberg. Your smile is on the sunflowers by the door, intricately calligraphied, woven into the cells. Moonlight follows my steps and I sigh through the buzz. People are elbowing, frantically, arms and hands and eyes every which way. Give me the honey goat cheese, the spinach artichoke dip, blue corn tortilla chips. Your name is on my breath while I scuttle my way through the crowd of elephants. I am looking for the grapes. The orange in the cashier's eyes hurts like a fire burning me to the bone. He says they no longer give pennies, grapes in hand, 5 cents off. I stumble and think white noise while my gut forgets, keep the change, and thinks only of your laugh overlaid with the loudspeaker. My second poem is called The Standing Man Fallen, after Allen Ginsberg by Toy Derricotte. The first time I saw my dad cry, I thought the sky was falling. My soft hands reaching for his, calloused, burdened, huge, knuckles like mountains I could climb for fun, running my fingers like little legs over rivers and valleys, now gripping the cool marble of the shower bench, shaking. His shallow breathing curled against the wall. Firefighters with bright red outfits and their fancy truck dulled under the moonlight. My mother holding my hand, listening to an old man saying words that made no sense, like stone and blocked,
words that belonged on the mountains of his knuckles in the daytime breeze, not under his skin. The men with the big red outfits from the TV walked him away with glassy eyes.
Last but surely not least, we've got Philippa Barlow. She's a sophomore literary artist here at Kappa. She was awarded a Scholastic Gold Key and was published in the anthology Home is a Hope and the Poetic Power Competition. Philippa is a big reader and draws from what she reads in her writing. She enjoys writing about history, castles, and the power of relationships, and has worked with multiple genres but has always been drawn to fiction. Philippa also runs a blog called 90 Cones with her family, where they're eating ice cream in every Pittsburgh neighborhood.
All right, hi. I'm going to be reading an excerpt from my fiction short story called Willows and Wallowing. I changed the title at the end of the writing process. All right. The sun had slipped behind the horizon over dinner, so as Charlotte ran outside, the cold hit her, her ankles sinking into the forming layer of snow. She had nowhere to go. Everyone was in on it, she realized. Lady Ida, though she didn't know the whole plot, and even Parker, based on his previous disdain, maybe even Charlotte's own mother, this would explain her insistence that Charlotte visit Amelia. Charlotte had nothing to bargain with, nothing to say. She had been the pawn her whole life. But never before had she felt so trapped. The train didn't even leave till morning. Even if she'd had the money for a ticket, there was nothing she could do. Charlotte felt her breath rise up in her chest, threatening to burst out, and she couldn't let it. That's not who she was. She was polite smiles and curt nods, not the earth-shattering scream that was building inside her. She ran, her boots tripping her up, but a rash determination to move fueled her. She had reached the edge of the wood, the cold sinking into her skin, daring her to turn back, when she nearly ran into the frame of a boy, a thick fur coat wrapped around him. Charlotte? He looked at her confused, but different somehow than inside the house. Are you all right? Parker spoke soft but serious. There wasn't a drop of mockery that had soaked his earlier speech. She caught herself, tears catching in her throat. He looked at a loss for how to comfort her, moving hesitantly closer to her. She backed away. I'm fine. Light and simple. That was the only way to convince someone of that lie. I was simply going for an after-dinner walk. I'd hardly call that a walk, and there he was again, as arrogant as ever. No, well, I needed to be alone, and to not have to deal with pleasantries, but she couldn't say that. Of course, I'll go, but I assume you've discovered our arrangement. He grimaced. Oh, were you pre-warned? She'd known this, but she needed him to say it, to say that she was the only one left in the dark. Not by much. And no, it wasn't my choice. Just my mother's relentless plot to have me married. He couldn't be that old, but who knows what the custom was this high on the social ladder. He stared at her a moment as if decoding her, then seemed to snap back to her senses. I can't believe I'll have to marry you, he said bitterly. Charlotte looked at him in miserable surrender. This would be some life to live with him. Her face must have revealed her panic because he backtracked. I mean, you're not that bad, he said awkwardly. The snow had settled on her shoulders and she shuddered. You should go back, he said, noticing her shivers. I can't. She couldn't do this, be vulnerable with him. It's been nice speaking with you. I think I shall continue my walk a moment more. She sidestepped him and walked towards the willow trees. Charlotte! There was something desperate in his voice. She turned back, fighting to keep her composure. As I've said, Mr. Trescott, I'd like to continue my walk. As she said this, her words felt colder than the snow beneath her feet. Parker's face fell. She closed her eyes to avoid watching him leave. This was for the best, she reminded herself. Getting attached to him would only make this worse. Only as she composed herself did she notice the jacket strewn on the ground, the fur collar dotted with snowflakes. It couldn't hurt, she thought, as she pulled it over herself, instantly met with a layer of comfort, his body heat still clinging to the lining. She wandered through the willows and settled by the trunk of one, wrapping the coat tightly around her and rested her head in her lap, hoping for escape, or at least sleep.
Thank you.
That was our last reader. Thank you, Pippa. And now SLB Radio has a closing statement for us.
Great job, everybody. Some fantastic pieces of writing there. We kind of like touched on a lot of things. We had some vampires. We had some love stories. We closed it out with a sort of Jane Austen-y type thing. That was awesome. That was very cool. Yeah, thank you so much for coming down. It was great. Let's give it up for our writers one more time. And also, your wonderful teachers who helped set this all up, too. Yeah. And there are parents here, too. Parents are here. Let's give it up for the parents. Yes. and then our special guest, Lauren Woods. Thank you so much. Yeah. Yeah, no, but we are doing summer camps. I know my coworker, Megan Valley, is here to sort of help describe them. But if you guys ever want to come here, learn about songwriting, audio production. We're doing a lot of different things like that.
Hi, guys. Thank you guys so much for coming, sharing your work. It was great to hear how many different voices we have here at Kappa. I wanted to pitch one particular summer camp that we're doing this year for the first time. It's called Ink to Ear. The idea is that you'll spend about a week developing a piece that will then be turned into an audio experience with music and voice acting, sound effects, whatever else you might want to include in that. Yeah, that's all. Thank you guys for coming.